nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Print them out and turn each page when you hear the following sound. Enjoy the show.
Okay, good afternoon. Welcome to the Nano 501 seminar. Just a little bit introduction of myself. My name is Minghao Qi. Q-I is pronounced like C-H-I or Qi. I joined the School of Electrical and Computer Engineering in the fall of 2005, and I'm leading a group to do the nanophotonics and nanofabrication. So showing in the figure is basically a relatively complicated 3D nanostructures. We call it a 3D photonic crystal, which I'll get into details. So before we get into the 3D photonic crystal, I'd like to introduce a little bit more on what are we doing, we're doing in our lab. Our lab is called Photonics and the Nanofabrication. So part of our effort is to do micro-ring resonators. What it does is that in the center, in the upper left, you see a picture of scanning electron micrographs, which shows that there's a waveguide which has a radius about 4.5 micron, and the light will actually circulate in there if the wavelength is matched with the perimeter of the ring. On the right side, we show a cross-section of the waveguide, which is the in silicon. So one of the key things we try to do is to fabricate the waveguide in as smooth as possible fashion so that light will not leak out the ring resonators so that we don't have a lot of loss. The other thing we're doing is doing nanofabrication techniques, which we're trying to get very small feature sizes. So on the lower left figure, we basically show that we can get rather smooth lines with about 25 nanometers. On the lower right image, we show that we can actually cut the gratings into the feature we want to see. So it has a very small pitch size of 64 nanometers and the line width is about 10 nanometers. So these are the some of the main thrust of our research. So let me just give a little acknowledgement of the work to be presented here. The work here is mainly my PhD work. So it was conducted at MIT. We have wonderful collaborators and and also professors giving us the guidance. So let me start to do some introduction on the photonic crystals. If you guys have seen that the 1D photonic crystals actually happens in many forms. For example, the multi-layer coatings, either in glasses or maybe in the mirrors on a car, have multiple layers of dielectric films. What it does is that usually what you see is that if the wavelength is somehow matched with the period of the film, then the light will be blocked. If you go a little bit more, is that you can go to 2D where you have a 2D shape periodicity such that light propagating in any direction within the plane will be blocked. 3D structure, you can envision that in the 3D structure, you could design the dielectrics such that the light, no matter what direction comes in, will be reflected rather than, so light basically cannot propagate into the crystal. Shown here in the dark red is typically, we call it high index material. Can be some semiconductor material like silicon, gallium arsenide, or indium phosphide. Those typically have indexes in above 3. For example, silicon has an index of 3.4, and the low dielectric material can be like silicon dioxide or just the air. So the photonic band gap, what we define, is a region of optical wavelength that cannot propagate within a specific structure. So this is in contrast to the absorbers, meaning that the material itself, if not for the structure of the material, both material are going to be transparent to the light at those wavelengths. So just by stacking them in a specific structure, we can block the light. So this we call it the sum of the optical insulation properties. This is a little bit more detail. We're talking about why the photonic band gap arise. So we define the photonic band gap as a range of frequencies within which the photons are not allowed to propagate in otherwise transparent materials. So on the left side, leftmost figure shows a uniform dielectric. So you can see that it has a wavelength of lambda can propagate within the band, the dielectric material. However, we artificially define a period, which we call A. Now, on the bottom, lower left bottom, basically show that this is we call a dispersion relationship, means that the spatial periodicity of lambda, which is defined in the vector k, defined as 2 pi over lambda, and the temporal property, which is the frequency, like the oscillation at which the light is oscillating. So basically, in a uniform dielectric, basically we have a linear relationship, means that the shorter the wavelengths, say for example lambda goes higher, then the vector goes smaller. The shorter the wavelengths, the larger the omega, which is the frequency. So basically, which is within our expectation, because the higher, the smaller the wavelengths, the higher the frequency. So this is called a linear relationship. Now what we do is we actually set one of the dielectrics to be a high index. Now the other is going to a low index. What happens here is we call it, the degeneracy is broken, where for the same frequency of lambda, and here we have specific called that the wavelengths of the light to be propagated is about twice of the period of A. So what happens now is that for specific traveling wave, for example, this guy, the maximum optical oscillation shown as a peak or valleys, if they are in the lower index material, what happens is that the energy is higher. On the other hand, if the maximum optical oscillation is in the high index material, then what happens is that the energy of the photon actually goes lower. So these define two states as the edge of the brilliant zone that defines that there are two otherwise degenerate state, but now they are split. One corresponding to this one is having a higher energy, while the lower one has a lower energy. Now there will be no other, say for example, what if we have a waveform that's having a maximum that in between the high index and low index material to fill in the energy gap, right? This wouldn't be a stable propagation because the light has to follow the symmetry. Basically, is that the light will either has its peak in the low index material or in the high index material. So as a result, if we change the index so such that we have periodicity of high and low index, what happens is that the light will either concentrate it in the low index material, thus having a higher energy, or has a high index, the light will concentrate in a high index material, resulting in lower energy. So in between, there will be no light propagating in there. So now if we shine a light, its frequency happens to within the gap, it will have no way to have a stable propagation state. All right, so this is the reason for the photonic band gap. We do have building blocks for the integrated optical device. So what we show here is that what happens for the photonic band gap is not just for a very high quality mirror. So basically the first application is that with the photonic band gap, what happens is all the light shining on the surface of the crystal are going to be reflected, right? But that is not what the photonic crystal are so exciting about. What happens is you create a defect. What we say is a defect is some deviation from the perfect periodicity. For example, I can stick in a material of, dielectric index that's within, between the low and high value. What happens is because the symmetry is broken, so the light otherwise are forbidden to travel in the 3D crystal, now is allowed. However, it is allowed only in the defect region. This has very fundamental importance. The problem is of light is that you can steer the light, but light doesn't stay still, right? If you turn on the light, the photons basically leaving you at a speed of light. You cannot really say, okay, I want the photons to stay still. It just doesn't do that. However, with the 3D photonic crystal, it is possible to trap the light. What we call it, this defect, we call it in fact a trap, because light can stay there, but it cannot propagate in any of the surrounding area. So on the other hand, if we stack those defects together, for example, now we form a waveguide. This is called the line defects. Now the light is no longer limited in this specific area. However, it can now go along the line defect that you designed. So in such sense, in a 3D photonic crystal, light has to follow the path that you designed it, which is a very important way, because otherwise in the free medium, light goes straight. Then you have to put a mirror or other things to basically reflect it. So this is, we call it the manipulation of the flow of light at a very small scale. So if your mirror is so small that it's comparable to the wavelengths of light, then there will be diffractions. In this 3D photonic crystals, ideally, light will have to go at even a submicron cross-section. So in theory, there are many predictions of the light, and many of them have been realized, but there are a lot that has not been realized. So an advantage of studying the photonic crystal is that the simulation is actually very accurate. You can indeed calculate with high numerical resolution to predict what the light will do in the designed structures. So what happens here is we show on the upper left, we show a diagram that light can actually make a very abrupt turn in the photonic crystal, which is the dots shown in the picture. So again, this is a line defect where you can see that we removed a line of dots in between the photonic crystal. So what happens is the light, when they have to propagate in the defect region or the waveguide region, when the waveguide is, make a turn, the light has two options, either get reflected or has to go along the waveguide. So there's no other way it can leak. So in order to achieve very high transmission, means that very low reflection, you need to do some optimized design. But in principle, it is possible to have very high transmission at a waveguide bend, which is sub-wavelets. As you can see, this is a wavelet. Now, we can also have a waveguide crossing. What happens usually is at a submicron lens scale, when the light comes in, it diffracts, because when it sees a feature that's about the wavelength size. However, you can design it such that the light will cross the waveguide without getting excited in this vertical waveguide. Again, you need to design it carefully. Even more exciting is that in theory, people have predicted if you have some nonlinear material in the photonic crystal, you can achieve what we call optical transistor. So how we are doing the optical transistor is that if this is a controlling signal, for example, going bottom to the top, if there are high optical power in this cross, it actually, the optical power will drive the nonlinear material such that it indeed can allow the light to pass horizontally. On the other hand, if there's no signal in the vertical waveguide, so the nonlinear material now has a slightly different refractive index, and then this horizontal signal will not be able to pass through. So most of them, for example, the optical transistor is still in the theory. So the theory predicts that we have not been able to demonstrate that because of the difficulty of fabricating the structures. What I want to emphasize is that doing the calculation for the photonic crystal or dielectric materials actually is not that difficult. We indeed have set up two tools, which we call the photonic crystal band calculation, and another tool is called MEEP, which is a finite difference time domain calculation, which tracks how the photon evolves when it hits a specific structure. The calculation of dielectric materials is relatively easier than calculating with lossy materials, for example, metal nanostructures, which is a very exciting field of plasmonics, which Professor Vlad Shalev's group is working on. Now, in the photonic crystals, it is dielectric, and if we assume the dielectric is lossless, then the calculation is indeed quite accurate. So I recommend you to go to the Nano Hub and register over there, and it's using the Web 2.0 technology, which allows you to actually do the work on the website. So the website is not only a place you can browse, but you can do the serious work over there. And we have two tools. Now, the photonic band, there's these two simulation tools are developed at MIT. So we got permission to install it in our Nano Hub. And there's some tutorials for the photonic band gap calculations. On the lower left, we show that this is what we call a photonic band diagram, which tells you the vertical axis is the frequencies. The horizontal axis shows you the k vector along different directions. So on the lower right, we show that some of the optical power distribution for some of the mode as a band edge. Okay, so now we are going to get into the experimental part. So photonic crystal, as I have mentioned, that they are 2D format and 3D format. The 2D photonic crystal has basically one layer, and it is easier to fabricate rather than 3D structures, which has multiple layers. So, however, in the 2D photonic crystals, we assume that the structure is infinite in the third dimension. However, in reality, we cannot have an structure which is infinite in the third dimension. So usually we cut it short. So basically, in ideal 2D photonic crystal, it is sticking all the way to infinite, but we have to cut it into certain length. Same thing here, is this is we call it a slab structure. What happens is that we have a starting from a slab, but we draw holes in the slab. And the advantage of this is that the vertical, because this material typically has a very high index, so light will naturally be trapped in the high index materials. And the same thing here, the rod also has high index. So what happens is the light will be guided or controlled in the plane by photonic band gap structures. But in the third dimension, it is confined by the high index materials. It's also pretty easy to introduce, for example, point defects, where we intentionally not etch a hole, and that will leave us a microcavity. Similar here, we make one of the rods to be much, much wider. That will allow us to get resonator over there. So this is we call it 2D slab photonic crystals that allows you to get the 2D photonic band gap and vertical index guiding. So many concepts have been proved in these 2D slab photonic crystals. Shown here, we have a high Q microcavity. Now, first, let me introduce what Q is. Q is defined as quality factors. A quality factor basically says how long this cavity can trap the light. So eventually, the light will leak away because none of the cavities is ideal. So the number of Q is how many cycles, because the photon is electromagnetic wave, it's oscillating, how many cycles it is has passed before the light has leaked out of the cavity. Typically, the leaking is defined as e to the exponential decay. So this is basically a lifetime divided by the temporal period, which is omega. And it typically is defined as the frequency divided by bandwidth. The frequency is usually the resonance frequency. Bandwidth is the line width of the resonance peak. So very high quality factors of 600,000 has been demonstrated. Recently, I think this number has gone up to more than 1 million. And also it is predicted that 2 million can be achieved. So that means the photon will stay there for up to 2 million cycles before it leaks out of the cavity, which is shown here. Now, what I want to make a case in this talk is that the slab photonic crystal does have its limitations. As you can see that in the 2D case, to achieve a very high quality factor, you need to design the structure very, very carefully. Now, on the other hand, what I show here is that this is a 1D structure. You can see the periodicity in the one dimension. Now, the vertical dimension is, we call it the index guide. Now, what happens is that if you make an imperfection or the defect, then there will be inevitably the leakage to the vertical direction. It can be minimized, but it can, in principle, you cannot fully eliminate that. So if we talk about future devices, if we want to integrate a large amount of devices into one chip, then there will be a lot of such cavities, bends, and all of them are called, basically disorders, and that will lead to eventually to the leakage of the light. So basically, I argue that the more devices you put on the 2D slab, the more loss you will have. So let's look at the 3D photonic crystal. As we have shown before, the 3D photonic crystals, they have a capability of completely confining the light, because light cannot travel propagate within the plane or vertical because it's all three-dimensional. So it has an omnidirectional band gap. You can view as a 3D mirror, basically. You know, it completely reflects the light no matter which direction it tries to go. Now, the 3D photonic crystal basically has very complicated structures. We call it a Yablonovite that's named after the Professor Eli Yablonovich, who first proposed the concept of photonic band gap. This structure, we will look into that, it actually can be viewed as drilling three holes at different orientations into a thick slab. This one was the first demonstrated 3D photonic band gap structures. We call it wood pile structures. Looks like, you know, you have wood logs. You know, the second layer basically is rotated 90 degrees. The third is the same as the first layer, but we have to arrange it such that the log is located as the center of the first layer log. Fourth layer is the same thing, basically. It's same as the second layer, but shifted by half of the period. What we are going to present here is a structure we call the MIT design. Before we go there, is that, you know, the choice of the photonic band gap structures is dependent on the size of the band gap. So what happens is, so the band gap is a frequency range within which that the photons cannot propagate. So a question is, how large is the frequency range? So we define the size of a band gap as the frequency range divided by the center frequency. That's why we get an absolute number, basically, without any unit. So that's 21% of the center band gap, you know, center frequency. So the size of the band gap is 21% of the center frequency. So obviously, the larger the size of a band gap, the better. So that's one of the reasons we are going there. Now, there are also, we call it inverted opal structures, which can be fabricated with self-assembly process. Unfortunately, I don't have time to go into detail, but our group is also investigating the inverted opal structures, which has a smaller, much smaller band gap. So let me show you how are we planning to do the fabrication. Basically, we'll first fabricate one layer of the slab structure. Then we will somehow put the second layer, which is a rod structure, on top of the first layer. Now, the rod layers has to stand in between the holes. So you can imagine if there's some misalignment, then the rods will fall into the holes. So we'll continue go. We have we'll put the third layer, which has to sit on top of the rods. And we'll continue go to make multiple layers. So we need about 7 layers total in order to show a band gap effects. Now the size of that, the period, is half of the micron. And the feature size of this guy can go, you know, the smallest veins can go as small as, you know, 60 to 100 nanometers. So this is one way we basically showing you how do we do the fabrication. It is similar to the integrated circuits manufacturing, such that, you know, in large semiconductor companies like Intel, Motorola, or AMD. So what we do is we start by depositing, here we use amorphous silicon, and we put a polymer layer, we call it a resist. The resist is actually sensitive when it is bombarded either with photons or the high-energy electrons. What happens is that if a specific area in the resist were exposed by light or high-energy electrons, then if we immerse this resist into specific chemicals we call developers, then what happens, the area that's exposed will be washed away. So in this way, we get a pattern. So instead of getting a uniform film, we now get a pattern. The resist was named as resist is because typically it sustains the etching process. The etching process you can think about as a chemical which will attack the underneath layer of material. However, here we typically use, we call it the image reversal process, we call it a liftoff. What happens is that we are going to deposit a very thin layer of metal. What that happens is that because the metal is so thin, it will be broken when it is covering across a topography difference. So the film now is no longer continuous. So the next step is we are going to attack those red material, which is polymer. You can do it with, for example, acetone or some specific organic solvents. It will not dissolve the metal, but the area which the metal which is standing on top of the organic material now will be washed away, right? Because the underneath material is washed away, so it will be gone. So then this one, we call it a hot mask. So the metal will stick very well under, we call it a reactive ion etch. What happens is there will be a plasma which will react with underneath silicon. However, the area that's covered by nickel, the plasma will not etch it away. So what happens we do is that now we will do a reactive ion etch that will remove the area that's not protected by the nickel, like here. Then we will remove the nickel, and now what the end result is that the pattern is now transferred into the silicon layer. We also, in order to build another layer, what we have to do is we have to fill those trenches, right? The trench has to be filled. Otherwise, if you deposit a second layer of amorphous silicon, it's going to fill, fall into the trenches. So what do? We use called a spin-on dielectric, which is a liquid. When you spin it, it will actually fill the voids and leave you a smooth surface. Then we do it a planarization process, which removes the top spin-on dielectric, which is yellow, and we have to control the process such that it stops right on top of the silicon layer. So we have a very nice filling of the voids. The next step is going to be deposit another layer of silicon, and then we'll have to spin the resist again. The lithography, which we call either by electron or a photon, has to be done in such a way that the second layer pattern is aligned to the first layer pattern. So this is the same process. Then we basically go ahead and do the reactive ion etch, which is punching the holes. The etching process is punching holes into the silicon where it is not protected by the mask layer. So we'll repeat that process however number of times in order to achieve the multi-layer structure. The structure we are planning to fabricate is rather complicated, and if we have to do it in 7 times, the chances are that it will never be accomplished. So what we made a compromise is that now the rod layer, instead of a circular rod, now it looks like a hexagonal shape. And I'll show you in the next slide basically how we can simplify the fabrication. So again, the structure has a hole layer and also a rod layer. So making a compromise in the rod layer allows us to generate the rod layer without a specific cycle of the fabrication process. So let's look at this. So first of all, we basically pattern and etch the holes, punch the holes into the silicon, and then we have to backfill with a specific material so that we have a smooth surface to deposit another layer of material. So the top wheel basically shows us we punch the holes and also fill the holes with a material we call it HSQ. So the next step is now we deposit a red layer, which is a silicon layer. We do the same thing. We punch holes into the red layer. However, we punch thicker. We continue punch into the first, you know, completed structures. Now, you know, the second layer basically is shifted with regard to the first layer. So when we punch holes, when we see this green silicon layer, we don't stop. We keep punch into the silicon layer. Now, then, if we focus now, this area now gets punched twice. It is not only punched by the first set of holes, like this, it also punched twice. Now, if we look at this specific area, that's the rod layer that we have. So by doing that, we actually cut the number of layers by half. That makes fabrication much more feasible than if we have to do it in seven layers. So the whole purpose of doing layer by layer fabrication is that we are now allowed to introduce those defects or the microcavities at our own design, basically. We can define, you know, which layer to introduce the defect and at what location we design the defect. So what we show here is we are going to leave one of the holes not punched. So what happens here is that we'll leave one of the holes intact. So it's also going to be the same material shown in the light blue, but it is the same material as the dark blue, which is silicon. So we also put many of the defects, because if we have only one defect, we are not going to see it when we try to measure it. And we also have a lower quality factor so that it's easier for us to detect the presence of the defect. So here now we show again how the entire process go if we do things in a simplified form. So what we do is we fabricate one layer of 2D photonic crystal. However, if you can see that the slab thickness is much thicker. And we also put a second layer, which is also quite thick. Now we keep etching into the first layer. Now the defect is shown in red. Basically, a number of holes are etched, but this specific hole is not etched. So this is showing basically in the cartoon I just removed the top layer, this layer, just to show what the defect looked like. Defect now looks like this. So now we go back and we put another layer on top. Now we keep, now next step is basically we punch holes in there. So this is now what the defect looked like. The other places you have rod layer, hole layer, rod layer. So we also put many defects in the layers, and we show that the defects are placed in a rather random fashion. This is intentional because if the defects are put in periodic fashion, then the defects may form a band, which basically is similar to, the defects in the crystals. So rather than observing a band, we want to see individual defects. So we basically put them into non-periodic fashion. So without going into any details, I just show you that those are the fabricated photonic crystals. You will see that there are multiple layers viewed from the top. A, B, and C shows a different layer of silicon. Obviously, it's not ideal. The holes are not completely circular. But again, we have small features like 60 nanometer. I believe it is still one of the smallest features in a freestanding 3D structure. So basically, we show the fabricated structure, and we also show you that there are indeed the rod layers underneath, and the rod layer is supporting the whole layer on the top. So this is one of the cross sections showing that we have a rod layer, you know, here and the whole layer on top. This is, you know, you can roughly see that there are a total of 7 layers, which is a whole layer here, and then the rod layer here and the whole layer here, rod layer here, another whole layer, rod layer, total of about 7 layers. This is one of the, you know, the worst case, basically. This is one of the structures that is not ideal, so we basically decided to cleave it. The real device to be measured was actually having a higher quality, but this is shown here just to show that we indeed have 7 structures, layers, in there. Some of the normal transmission we measured is that we have a lensed fiber and we have a photonic crystal shown as PHC, and then we basically detect the normal transmissions. So as you can see, expected from the photonic crystal is that there will be a range of light that will be basically blocked. That's where the photonic band gap is. However, if we have microcavities, that will allow certain amount of light to tunnel through. That's what the defects will do. So this is exactly what we see. So the red curve is the actual measurement, and we do have some oscillation, which is due to the a complicated interaction between the Fabry-Perot, between the you know, the wafer. However, the main feature we indeed see here is a, basically a defect tunneling resonance. So the blue curve basically shows the simulation. You know, what if every all the structure is ideally designed, and this is what it should like, you know, show like. Now, we also show that without any defects, the dotted green light line shows if without any defect, we will see a clean band gap without any of the resonance peaks showing here. So the quality factor means that the light will leak out by staying only 20 cycles. So that's a very low quality factor, but it allows us to have a relatively large peak, because light does go through. If it has a very high quality factor, then the light will be having a very narrow bandwidth and probably a low intensity too. So we also did some reflection measurement, and we can see the reflection measurement give us more details about the resonance peaks. So we will see 1, 2, 3 resonance peaks lined up pretty well. Those are 3 dips that's predicted by the cavity mode calculations. And we also show that a defect does concentrate light. So the light, this is the simulation, shows that the light does get concentrated in the defect area. And we also measured from the multiple angles and to demonstrate that indeed it does have, you know, 3D photonic band gap. Also, the defect stays relatively showing at the same location. So that means it is indeed a resonance peak. So we also did another reflection measurement and did some calculation, and it indeed matches very well with the finite domain, time domain, you know, finite difference time domain calculations. And this tool is also actually available in the Nano Hub. So I recommend you, if you are interested, you can play with the tool, which is called MEEP, and you will be able to do some quick calculations. So the result was reported in 2004 in the magazine of Nature. So I don't have a lot of time, but I'll talk a little bit about the cavity in the 3D photonic crystals. So one thing the 3D photonic crystal allows is to have light to be confined in the air. This is very important. If you can concentrate light in the air, then it will do job for you, for example, to do chemical sensing. If a molecule goes in there, it will interact with a much more enhanced optical power. And this is great for sensing. And also, if the optical power is in the highly nonlinear materials, that will allow you to have stronger nonlinearities when the optical power is enhanced. This is also showing you that this is light confined in the point defect. We also want to introduce to you there are other means of cavities for, we call it microcavities. And indeed, the quality factor can be very, very high. You know, for example, if you make a very microsphere, basically, it's a droplet. And due to the surface tension, the droplet of glass can be very, very smooth. And the light can stay there for 10 up to 10 to the 9th cycles. However, the volume of the cavity is relatively large. So the higher intensity will require you to have tight confinement, means that you need to light to stay there long, but also in a very small volume. Now, this is we call it 2D photonic crystals. It does have 600,000 volumes, about 10 times. We call it optimal, is the smallest pattern, smallest volume that you can confine the light in there. And either way, the ring resonator or the 2D photonic crystal, if you have any disorder, that will give you some radiative scattering, which limits the Q. The cavity in complete gaps will allow you to have, you know, the smallest possible volume of the cavity, and the quality factor can grow very large. Basically, the quality factor can grow exponentially with a number of layers. And the theory basically says that the band gap remains even if our quality of crystals is not as high as that for the 2D photonic crystals. So we say this confinement is immune to disorder. So Mr. Rock Grids of MIT, he did some calculation, shows that if you have a perfect crystal, you know, then you will have a gap which is in a TM mode. Now, this is a defect showing here. However, you know, if you distort, like the rods now looks pretty bad in shape. And also the location of the rods are no longer the imperfect locations. However, there will be still band gap resist. You know, band gap will remain there. So what happens is if you do the calculation, the light will still be trapped in the cavity. Now, the only difference is that the quality factor is slightly degraded from 9,000 to 6,000. So even with such a very bad photonic crystal, you can still have high Q. Now, this is a 2D photonic crystal, means that it is extending, the rods extending infinitely long in the third dimension. If you have such a shape in the slab or the rod structures, then you will not have any appreciable quality factor. So in reality, basically says that even if you have the disorders, basically even if you have surface positioning order difference, now you will still see that the more layers surrounding the defect, the more higher the quality factor you will have. Now, such prediction is only possible in reality for 3D photonic crystals, because for 2D photonic crystals, you simply cannot have an infinitely long rod. So what it shows here is that in the 3D photonic crystals, basically the longer, the larger the number of layers, it is actually pretty tolerant, even if the layers are quite bad. You know, either thickness are different or roughness. the number of layers, if the number of layers grows, the quality factor will grow, despite that there will be any of the imperfections. So the calculation shows that in the 3D photonic crystal, even if you have such large amount of distortions, the light will still be confined in the center. So I'll probably skip this, because we're running out of time. I'm proposing a way to do the deterministic single photon emission. So I'll skip that. Let me just summarize that the microcavities in 3D photonic crystals has its unique properties that allows us to go to very high quality factors and also some of the smallest volume that we can allow to do the calculation to do the confinement. Now it is still challenging to do the fabrication. However, it is now can be fabricated. The quality factor of those 3D cavities is immune to fabrication distortions, allow us to get very high quality factors. The high Q cavity in 3D photonic crystals may be useful for quantum information processing due to the suppression of spontaneous emission. This is a unique properties of cavities in 3D photonic crystals, and they can also be used for chemical and biological sensing applications because they can confine the light in air so that the molecules can diffuse into the region. So let me conclude for now, and I'll have a few minutes to answer the questions more on the fundamentals of photonic crystals. Thank you. Yes.
So did all of the simulations you showed up there come from the NanoHub stuff?
No, the simulation were certainly carried out in various groups where the work were done. So, for example, many of the calculation comes from MIT, but the simulation programs are open source. You can use them, and we have installed them on the NanoHub, which is backed by pretty high computation power, so you can go ahead and try out some of the structures. Okay. Yes?
I have a question. First, if I didn't see localized energy in the defect, what is the volume? Around this defect, you should provide at least to make it possible.
I see. So this is, let me just quickly go back.
It's about wavelengths or what?
Yeah, so the smallest volume is actually half wavelengths in both X, Y, and Z. So the wavelengths, half of the wavelengths in the material, which N is the index. So the smallest volume is half of the wavelengths within the material of index N. So that's the half wavelength cubed.
Yeah, that's the smallest volume of the defect area. And how many
layers
around you should provide to make it concentrated? If you surround with three layers in all three directions,
is it
enough, for example?
That's actually the difficult part. So for the 3D structures, in the X and the Y direction, there are numerous layers surrounding it. Mm-hmm. Really, the leakage is the third dimension. So as you can see, for three or four layers, you get quality factor goes up to 10 to the fourth. And certainly you need probably 10 layers, both above and below. Now, this is the worst case scenario, but we are expecting that by proper design and less the non-imperfections, right? So we would be able to achieve high quality factors without going into, you know, 11 or 12 layers. So this is a worst case scenario. You know, as long as you get, if you get 12 layers up and below, no matter what your defect is, it's going to have a high quality factor.
And
yes.
One more question. It's related to biochemical sensing.
Mm-hmm.
If you create defect, and what is the frequency? It's in the band gap frequency range, mm-hmm. or above or below?
Yeah. So the band gap is a big region.
Mm-hmm.
So a defect will resonate at a specific frequency. So if this resonance
inside
the band gap, if this specific wavelength is in resonance, for example, a Raman peak of a molecule, then if the molecule goes in there, then it will actually enhance the Raman emission, for example. That's what we would like to exploit.
We are coming to my question. If some molecule created this Raman radiation,
mm-hmm.
how it will go outside?
Yeah.
Since it's in the band gap.
Yeah, that's actually a very good question.
What is the coefficient?
Right. The scheme to do actual sensing is a little bit more complicated because Raman certainly involves the excitation wavelengths and the emission. So what we do is, for example, we can design the cavity such that it is resonate with the excitation wavelengths, right? So then we have a huge amount of optical power in there to excite the molecule. Now the Raman emission, actually when it goes out, it's actually at a different wavelength.
So
Could be done. So, for example, it is probably not very easy to get it outside the band gap, but you can put it, for example, a coupling mechanism. So, for example, you can put a waveguide close to it. So that would allow you to couple that out. So again, there's a little bit more details in that, but it is we believe it's feasible. Okay, any more questions? You know, any questions related to, you know, background or anything like that? Okay, so thank you for your attention and attendance. Do you have any minute to talk about this UV spectrum?